We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. This week, the University of Illinois will be hosting a week-long festival celebrating the work of African women writers. This morning, we'll be talking a bit about this festival, and also we'll talk with one of the festival participants, Hope Azeda. She's founder and artistic director of one of the major theater companies in Rwanda, and we'll be talking about a work that she directed called Africa's Hope that was first performed and created to mark the 10th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide, 1994. Also here in studio with us to talk about the Writers' Festival, Kathy Perkins. She's professor of theater at the University of Illinois, and she is the one who is coordinating the event. One of her special areas of interest is African women in theater, and she'll talk a little bit about the festival. And if people are interested, by the way, in finding out more about what will be going on, this is an event that is jointly sponsored by the Center for African Studies at University of Illinois and also the theater department. And you can find out what's going on in connection with the festival most easily, provided you have internet access, by going to the website of either of the two departments, theater or African studies. Let me tell you just a little bit more about our guest, Hope Azeda. She's the founder, the artistic director, and choreographer of the Mashirika Creative and Performing Arts. It's one of the major theater companies in Rwanda. And under her direction, this group collaboratively created this work, Africa's Hope, which was performed in Kigali at the 10th anniversary commemoration of the genocide. Her work as writer, performer, teacher has taken her to theaters and universities all around the world. In addition to her theater work, she served as casting director for several films that had to do with Rwanda and the genocide. She's also currently the president of the International Association of Theaters for Children and Young People, Rwanda branch, and also serves on the executive committee of their organization. She's here with us in the studio and along with Kathy Perkins, and we're pleased that they're both here to talk. Questions are certainly welcome. People who are listening can take part in the conversation very easily by calling us at 333-9455. That's the local number. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And you may email your thoughts, comments, questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. Thank you both very much for being here.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. I think probably the place to start would be for me to ask Kathy Perkins to talk just a little bit about this event. Now, this is intended to be the first of an annual event overall.
Biennial.
Every 2 years to spotlight the work of African writers. And for the first event here, what you want to do is specifically talk about women writers.
Right. Well, the intention is to do Africa and the diaspora. But I wanted to start the first year with Africa, mm-hmm. and then maybe 2 years from now we may do Brazil or we may do the Caribbean. But the idea, my interest in the works by African women goes back to about 20 years ago when I lived mm-hmm. on the East Coast. My background is a lighting designer, and when I lived in New York, I worked with a lot of South African exile artists, and all the works were by men, and all the key performers were men. And I said, what's wrong with this picture? And in 95, after apartheid was officially over, I decided to make a trip to South Africa because I knew more South Africans than Africans anywhere else. And I said I was curious to see what women were writing about. And I can't imagine that they're silent. They must have something to say. And when I went to South Africa, it was like there were all these women writing. Mm-hmm. And I found such an abundance of information that I was able to publish a collection of plays just by South African women. And then from there, I just began to travel throughout Africa to see what other women were doing. And I was just amazed at the work that women were doing. But the work was very difficult to get published.
And just having read a little bit about some of what you've read on this, I think that seems to be the case, that women You know, they just don't have the opportunities that men do. They don't have the educational opportunities. That's much more difficult for the work to be published. It's probably more difficult for them as creative artists to be taken seriously, that they face a number of hurdles that men who are trying to do the same work don't.
Correct. Correct.
Can you talk a little bit about that from your experience?
Yeah, it's not that easy for women to, you know, be at the forefront to rebuild their societies. Because, like my case, I was born in a family of 11 people, and 10 of them were all scientists. And I'm the only person who took a different direction to art. Mm. So all through, I was just fighting through. I was like a moon fighting through the, you know, dark clouds, you know, trying to shine. But it was not until I released my first production, and that's when my father was like, ah, that's my daughter. Because when people used to ask him what I do, they was like, I know, she's doing these things I don't understand. Drama. I don't know drama. I don't know what it's going, where it's going to take her. And I think it's the case with, you know, with many people trying to do art, especially women.
Yeah, I think probably many parents would have the same reaction if their children told mm-hmm. them that they wanted to be a painter, sculptor, actor, writer, mm-hmm. you know, maybe get the same kind of reaction. Mm-hmm. What was it, do you think, that drew you to drama as something that you wanted to do?
In the first case, my father had wanted me to do law, but I was born in exile. And while I was in exile in my final years in university, I joined a theater company, which was also a struggle. I used to hide to go and rehearse. So when I joined university, I just had enough credits to do drama. I didn't have enough credits, mm-hmm. points to do law. And I was really happy to do that. So at the end of that, when I was graduating around 98, that was after, that was about 5 years after the genocide, and having been in exile, it's not a good thing. Mm. And I had most of my siblings, most of my brothers and sisters had moved back to Rwanda. So someone saw me perform in Uganda, where I was born, and he was like, well, you know what? When you're done with your studies, come to Rwanda and do theater. And it had always been my passion to write and be able to direct my work, because I feel it's the best way I can express myself. It's the only strength I was given as right from the start I was born to do art, although I was not like morally supported by people around me. So having like the family of 11 and got less, and I was just alone with my parents still living in another country, I was like, I had to go start doing theater back home in Rwanda. So I moved back to Rwanda. And seeing what the state in which the country was, there was no other strength I had. The only weapon I had was art. So I started using theater to rebuild the society.
Yeah. Is that, let me turn back to Kathy Perkins. Is this kind of approach to theater that is as something that that's not, perhaps you want it to be an entertainment or else people won't come, but using theater as a way to talk about difficult issues or to get people to think about things that maybe they don't, that are going to be uncomfortable or that they don't easily talk about, is that something that you see a lot in Africa?
Oh, definitely. And that's one of the things that drew me to going to all these different countries in Africa. You know, you see these women, you know, we tend to think of theater going to the Kranich Center and being entertained, and a lot of the theater that you see throughout Africa, it's either called social issues theater, theater for development, popular theater, and it's theater to raise people's awareness about conditions in society. And this isn't the only type of theater, but this theater is very popular throughout Africa. And you'll see a lot of women, in fact, most of the women that are coming here, most of their theater is about educating, healing people, raising consciousness. And so you see this a lot. And what attracted me to this theater, I grew up in Alabama during the 60s. I guess I'm telling my age. And during the Civil Rights Movement, and we did this. We just called it community theater. But it wasn't until years later when I began to go to Africa and the Caribbean and I saw this theater. It's like, oh, this is what I did as a child. And so that's what drew me to it, because it was something that I could relate to and I'd done, but it was like way in my past. Yeah. But theater, you know, primarily is used to educate people. And you see women doing it an awful lot.
Yeah.
And it's powerful. I mean, you'd be surprised how powerful theater is. I saw it a lot in Zimbabwe and South Africa and Uganda. The work is just extremely powerful. And I'm hoping people will come out because Hope is doing a wonderful piece, which I'll let her talk about.
Okay. Well, do that. What would be people be able to see from you here this week?
This week they'll see a short performance of it's a play. It's called Echoes from a Thousand Hills. And if you look, Echoes, I'm talking about voices of women from a thousand hills. Rwanda is called the land of a thousand hills. It's the most beautiful country. I'm not even lying. You can come and visit. It's the most beautiful country in the world. It's called the land of milk and honey. It's just quite unfortunate that it's got a big history. Yeah, like for 100 days, you had 1 million people killed. And that was really bad. But this piece talks about the journey of a woman from the kitchen to being an advisor at the World Trade Organization. Because women in Rwanda are quite a hope to other countries. They have a drive force of survival. And you have this woman who studies in the kitchen and has not been going to school, but later goes to school. And then you have this woman who becomes a liberator, who becomes a freedom fighter, who picks up guns to protect her children and her rights. So she's not just using a gun to create violence, she's creating peace. So that can be discussed also. So later this woman goes, but basically it's like they will see 100 years of an Rwandese woman in just 20 minutes, the journey of a Rwandese woman. And I think it's quite very powerful in Rwanda because women have been given the power. They hold the biggest percentage in the parliament. So women are educated and they've played a big role in helping that country go forward.
And that's one of the impetus for the festival, because I wanted people to see another side of African women. We have this negative image, you know, primarily because of the media, of what African women are like. They're always starving, they're always in refugee camps, and, you know, they can't take care of their kids. And I'm not saying that image does not exist, but I want to show a diversity of women. Like Hope talks about this woman who's in parliament. You know, a lot of people don't know that there is a female president on the continent of Africa. So you have women in a variety of areas. And what I'm hoping is that the six women who will be performing will be able to show the diversity of African women, because I've got women from Tanzania. We're looking at Tanzania, Rwanda, Kenya, South Africa, and Nigeria that will be performing. And they all have very unique stories. So I'm hoping people will come out.
Let me just very quickly introduce again the guests for this hour of Focus for folks who might have just tuned in. The last person you heard here speaking, Kathy Perkins. She's professor of theater at the University of Illinois. She is a specialist in African women in theater and is the coordinator for an event taking place this week on the campus celebrating African women writers. And this is something that's jointly sponsored by the Department of Theater and the Center for African Studies. It is the first of what they hope will be a biennial event, so every other year, looking at writers of the African diaspora. So not only writers from Africa, but also could be writers from South America, from the Caribbean.
Sure.
That would be the idea. And they have organized a wonderful event and have brought women from, as Kathy Perkins has said, brought a number of women here from Africa that will be talking about their work and doing performing. And one of the guests who is here for the celebration is here in the studio with us this morning, Hope Azeda. She is from Rwanda and is a leading figure in contemporary Rwandan theater. Questions are certainly welcome, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. I'm interested in having Hope talk a little bit about particularly this work, Africa's Hope, or I guess I've also seen it referred to by the title Rwanda, My Hope.
Yeah.
A work that you helped to create, and it's about the genocide, the 94 genocide. And
yes.
Again, people will remember this was a truly horrific event over a relatively short period of time, about 3 months, maybe a little bit more than 3 months. Yeah. It is hundreds of thousands of people. Maybe it's thought maybe even as many as a million people.
It could be more.
Died.
It's more because every other day, dead bodies are discovered in mass graves. It's really terrible. Yeah.
And so this is a dramatic work about that.
Yeah.
Maybe first talk a little bit about how it is it was created. How did it come to be?
I think Africa's Hope was a turning point for me in my approach to art. Because when I moved to Rwanda, I was doing a lot of fiction theater. But 10 years after genocide, we were approached by the Ministry of Culture and an organization that is helping preserve memory for Rwanda. And they asked us to do a performance on the 10th commemoration. My first question was, where are we doing this performance? They said, in a soccer field, in a soccer stadium. And my next question was, how many people are you expecting? They said, over 30,000 people. And since I was speaking, that was really a blow in my face. And they also said they wanted the piece to focus on memory and hope. So basically, that was like the direction. That was the structure of the piece. So we're going to start with memory and end with hope. But 10 years after genocide, and the tradition of mourning during genocide, during the Memorial Week, every 7th of April in Rwanda, we mourn for 1 week. Everything is dark. The weather is bad. People are dressed in black and purple. So already the atmosphere designs your piece. So there's nothing else other than purple or black you could wear. So our costumes were all sorted out. But the challenge was, how do we perform in a society that is used to just mourn around the fire and talk about their story? So immediately we went to visit, one of us went to make a research with a woman who had survived in a mass killing in a church. She had hidden in dead bodies when she was pregnant for 4 days, and she had given birth to a baby boy. So when he was interviewing this lady, he was shocked by how the boy was listening to how he had survived in church. That boy was 10 years old. So when they brought back this material, we're like, there's no other way we can. This is now a direction. We are going to look at genocide through the eyes of a 10-year-old, questioning what happened. If you say my country was beautiful, what happened on that day? Because this boy is born on the 7th of April. He cannot even celebrate his birthday because there's no celebrations in the country. It's a Memorial Week, and every celebration is closed. So it's closed. So the whole piece, we had a key narrator of a young boy of 10 years all through, and we just focused on testimonies of children around 11, 12, and 13-year-olds. So the piece, that was the memory beat. We used testimonies. And for the hope bit of the story they had asked us to do was, what do these young people want to see happen? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the whole piece was around that. But it was performed by 1,000 performers in a soccer stadium.
The cast?
The cast was 1,000. Yeah. We had 200 dancers. We had 200 musicians. And we had 600 kids of 10 years old. Spelling words like never again, run the 10-year zone. But of course, during the piece, some of the moments in the piece triggered a lot of trauma in the stadium of thousands. And we had the Red Cross run over and over again. You know, people were being upset by the kind of actors, but being upset because they were bringing back the flashback. Mm-hmm. They are just seeing that moment. But the same people came after and said, thank you for that peace. You walked in our spirit. And from there on, it changed my approach to theater. I just wanted to do theater that had a meaning to life. I wanted to do theater that I could be able to walk in people's spirits. I wanted to search that connection. So that's how the piece came up. And today, at that time, the piece was called Rwanda My Hope. I had called it Rwanda My Home, but the producers preferred Hope, and I was like, it's really ridiculous. I'm called Hope, and I'm not going to have a piece Rwanda My Hope, directed by Hope. So it was a big argument around Hope and Home. So today it's called Africa's Hope, because like a month later it was invited to the G8 summit in Scotland. We did not take 1,000 performers. There was no plane where that could take them, but we took a cast of 10, yeah. And today the cast is 9, and it's really traveling all over the world now. It's touring, And next year in January, it's going to South Korea, then Denmark and Sweden.
Yeah. So that makes it that's a slightly more scaled down version makes it a little bit easier to take it around so that other people can in other places can see it.
Yeah. It's surprisingly, it's a random story, but you'll be shocked that you perform it in UK and it connects well to the audience, because I think the pain, the emotions in it, the it's quite a dark piece, but it ends on a light. You end up with, you know, energy to move on, because you're challenged that in every horror there's beauty where there's a will to survive.
I've only read about the piece. I don't know if Kathy, have you seen a performance?
Well, she rehearsed it last night. Well, we did a reading.
No, the reading.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's the Echoes. Other piece. I'm sorry. No, I haven't seen it.
No, the reading I did is Echoes from a Thousand Hills. That's a different
I'm
piece.
Sorry.
It's not Africa's Hope I'm doing.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. But I just want to interject one of the other things that Hope will be doing while she's here. She's going to direct, we have a group on campus called Inner Voices Social Issues Theater, directed by Lisa Fay. And she's going to be working with the students in Inner Voices. They're going to direct a piece focused on violence, and I don't know if you want to talk more about that, because violence is something that everybody can relate to regardless of what country you're in. But I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I know, Kathy. I've been giving them a bit of headache. They're asking, what's the title of the piece? And I was telling them, I don't know. I cannot know. What exactly are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. I just need to meet the people. I feel the people. I feel the ground. I feel the issues. Then I work around those issues. Because Africa's Hope, one thing it really empowered me with was the creative ability. You have no idea. To do any piece around the Memorial Week in Rwanda, it's so difficult. It's so difficult. This was a piece that we are rehearsing, and we had to take a break because performers were crying. And as a director, you cannot tell them, hurry up, I mean, cry very fast. We are running out of time. Tomorrow is the show, you know. You can't do it. So you take a break, let nature take its course, then come back, take a break. You know, it's not a coffee break or anything. It's a break because people want to just, you know, recharge their energy to move on. So that piece also empowered me with the skills to come up with just raw pieces. Like, I meet people, listen to them, and we work around it, and we work around those issues. And the structure that I will work with, the Inner Voices, will be like Africa's Hope structure. It will be about facts on the ground. It will be about the stories on the ground. And what do we want to see?
You know, one of the things I wonder about is as a writer or as a creator of theater pieces, how it is you get, if you're talking about something that's difficult and emotionally upsetting, how it is you create something that you can still get people to watch and to come to, and that partway through they just don't say, I can't, I'm sorry, this is too much, and just have to get up and leave. I mean, how do you balance the really difficult stuff with something that's compelling enough so that you hold on to the people and they don't just say, they don't just shut down because it's just too much?
I think, that's the challenge. How do you do it that people don't shut down? Like in Africa's Hope, we have this boy narrate how he survived in a church, how he survived in church. But it's quite heavy looking at this boy going through his story. But when he says, they tell me that that Rwanda is beautiful country. It has beautiful culture. Ah, yes, I love the language. I love this. So when he starts talking about, I love this, I love the beauty, then you put in flashbacks of the beauty part of it. And that makes the person who's watching this piece feel like you want to move on, you know. So I have had incidences where people, like, you have tears rolling down your cheeks, but again, there's a smile on your face. And that's life. That's the reality. Life is about two sides. Life is about laughter. Life is about crying. Life is about, you know, horror. It's about beauty. But the thing is, shall we ignore the reality on the ground because we cannot take it in? No.
I think this is a great testimony to the power of theater.
Right.
Theater, and this type
of theater, rarely do I see people walk out. Because, again, I think the beauty in theater is like it's live and, you know, people can relate to a lot what's going on. Because a lot of the theater is, you know, it's for that community or for that, you know, specific cultural group. And people, they can relate to what's happening on stage. They can say, oh, this has happened in my life and I can relate to that person. And they want to watch that. And with a lot of the theater, there's usually a lot of, there's usually conversation or talk back afterwards where people can really speak about it. And I've seen these conversations go on for hours, you know.
Yeah, and also like subjects like genocide, they are very fragile subjects that are easily denied. So if you as an artist, you're going to downplay the truth because you want to hold an audience, then you're downplaying the truth and you're contributing to the denial. You see? So when you have all this big monster of a network of people denying the truth, yet the truth is there. So you also try to hit back with the truth. This is the truth. And this, you know, so it's a challenge to us that how do I make an audience? How do I connect to an audience? But from what I have seen with my experience, I have never seen any person. Actually, when they after they've watched it, they don't want to go away.
They want to talk about it.
They want to talk about it. They want to get there because it's a universal evil. It can happen to anybody. It's not just a random business. It's not just Hope's business. It's just these things are quite universal concepts.
And at performances in Rwanda, at least, were there in the audience both people who were victims and people who were perpetrators?
Definitely. Yeah, they are there. They're there, and like when you're doing public performances, this particular piece, I'm focusing on a child. I don't care about whether it's a child of who or who, but, you know, these children, we owe them answers that we don't have. And they are the tomorrow. So if we don't give them a platform, it's also not right. So we have one of the lines in the piece that says, I don't care whether you're Hutu or Tutsi, white or black, what matters to me is being an individual. Because it's kind of, it doesn't make sense to them that labeling people, making you as A, B, C, D, can create such hatred.
You were living in Uganda at the time of the genocide.
Yeah.
And you are a Tutsi. So it was your people who were the ones who were dying.
Yeah.
Did being a part of this and being involved in these performances, what did that do for you personally?
Yeah, well, one thing is that it made me start doing art for humanity, but also my parents left Rwanda in 1959. There was a pre-genocide then, and they moved to Uganda. That's why I managed to survive and I can be able to talk today. But I was born during Amin's regime in Uganda. So I have both sides of the story, you know, whereby when there was silence, it was even more scary. You are used to guns and guns, when you hear just like guns, we used to call them, oh, popcorns are quiet today. You know, we used to call them popcorns. They had become like part of our lives. So, but it became more provoking in my life when I started seeing dead bodies floating and they're being showing these images. Then I could not even talk to my brothers. I don't know where they had gone. Because when they're joining the war to fight the government, none of them said bye. They just left. It was a secret move. And they left, and then you're there. And then you start asking yourself, and the only person who could give me answers was my father. I would ask him, what is this? What is a Hutu? What is a Tutsi? What is this or what is that? And the answers he gave me, then none of them make sense to me. Because there's no tribe like Hutu or tribe like Tutsi. People are just people. And these are just labels that came after. So it kind of annoys you and you feel like There's nothing else you can do apart from that. Focus on issues in society.
We're a little bit past our midpoint. Hope Azeda is with us. She's a leading figure in contemporary Rwandan theater. She's the founder, the artistic director, choreographer of Mashirika Creative and Performing Arts. It's one of the major theater companies in Rwanda, and under her direction, this group collaboratively created this work, now known as Africa's Hope. It was performed first in Kigali at the 10th anniversary commemoration of the genocide, and also has been now performed. It was performed at the G8 World Summit in Edinburgh 2005. It toured the UK and has played in a smaller scale version, not quite as big as that first one, all the way around the world. She has been artist in residence at a number of places, Institute for the Arts and Civic Dialogue in Cambridge, Massachusetts. She has also been involved in festivals around the world. She's been casting director for several movies that have as their subject the genocide of 94. She is one of the writers who is here in Champaign-Urbana for the event Celebrating African Women's Writers. It's a week-long festival. It's sponsored by the Department of Theater and African Studies, also the Center for African Studies here at the U of I, and will be happening every other year now, looking at the work of writers of the African diaspora. And also here in the studio with me is Kathy Perkins. She's professor of theater. She has a special interest in African women in theater, and she's the coordinator of the event. If people who would like to find out what's going to be going on in connection with the event, probably the easiest thing to do would be get on your computer and go either to the website of the theater department or of African Studies, and you can look at the schedule. And I don't know if Professor Perkins, you would like to highlight any other particular thing or some things that are going on.
Sure. If you're free today at noon, between noon and 1 at the Women's Resource Center on the corner of Wright and Green, we will be having our official opening reception to kick off the festival. And that's at noon, Women's Resource Center. Four of the women will be there, Hope from Rwanda, Mashai Mawangola, who's from Kenya, and our two South African artists, Malika Ndlovu and Chantel Snayman. So please come out and visit them if you have the time. Mm-hmm. Wednesday on stage 5 at the Kranich Center, Malika and Loba will be doing spoken word. Everything is free and open to the public. We will have 4 performances at the Armory Free Theater Friday night, Saturday night, 2 on Sunday. And Saturday we're having what we call our community celebration from 1 to 5. Our guest artists will be performing as well as local talent. And there will be a drumming workshop. If you have a drum, bring your own drum, but there will be a few to pass around. So it's to be a festive event. Again, we're celebrating the works of these women. Mm-hmm. So I encourage everybody to please come out if you have time.
And later in the week, I also want to mention, too, here on this program on Wednesday at 11 o'clock, we will be talking with Malika Ndlovu and Chantel Snyman. Both
Correct.
Are going to be here on the program.
Right, so and they're we'll performing. Malika Ndlovu, we go way back to 1995 when I first met her in South Africa. And her work deals with the whole issue of identity. I don't know how much people know about the different racial classifications in South Africa, but she and Chantel would be identified as colored people, people of mixed race, and they're performing a piece that deals with that issue of identity. And the piece is called A Colored Place, and it's a very popular piece in South Africa, and I'm really excited to have her here to perform it. And Mashai, who's from Kenya, will be performing a piece looking at famous African women. So Mashai is a storyteller, and also a scholar. And on Friday, the other scholars will come in, and we'll do 2 panels. One will be on African women and performance, which Hope will be a part of, and then the second panel will be on African women and publishing. So it's a pretty full week. I've got the women running.
Well, and here, other questions, comments, whatever, certainly welcome. You want to get in on the conversation, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. I understand when you created your company, there wasn't a lot of theater going on in Rwanda, or at least there weren't people who were doing theater professionally in Rwanda. What sort of challenges were there in doing that?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question, because After my university, they had written a script about Rwanda's reconciliation. It was a story about three brothers. So I just moved to Rwanda with the script, minus money, because I just left university. So I went and looked for the person who had seen me perform in Uganda, and I was like, I'm here with my script. Can I have some people who would love to perform and see if we can do this piece of theater? And he put me in contact with radio actors. Radio drama was quite popular there, but they had no idea of what theater was, like performing on stage. So I called a number of people to do a reading with me. And after the reading, they're like, oh, we like the story, but the question is, how much money are you paying us? And that,
how much money are you paying us?
And I told them, to be honest, I don't even have a dollar. I don't have enough. I have no money. But if we sit and work on this script and work out a proposal, look for funding, perhaps we might get some money. But right now it's better we just focus on the story. And to be half of the people left. They left, and half that remained are still with me today, 10 years down the road. The few that left want to come back now, but it's too late. So what happened is that those ones who remained would rehearse anywhere, under the trees, on verandas, as long as there's a space, we're not interrupted and we just focused on our... And people used to think we are mad people. We're not really okay in that upstairs. Because also the French Culture Center was not very supportive. They're still having... The French government was having issues with the Rwandan government. So it was not easy to get space to work. And especially for the work after the genocide was just like accusing the French government. We wrote a proposal and submitted the proposal to a brewing company, a beer company. And they have they had a beer which was called Gahuza Miryango. Gahuza Miryango is like a beer that brings families together. So they said, wow, this is a good project. We can fund it as long as you talk about our beer. And I was like, I don't mind your beer. I don't even drink beer. But the name is quite good. We are trying to unite people. So if you, besides beer, theater can also unite people, then let's go forth. So they gave us money, and we were able to buy costumes, rent some space for rehearsals. And we printed some tickets, and we were charging our ticket about 2,000. That's a 500 francs, which is about $5. And we made really aggressive publicity. And tickets were selling out. And the show started running on and on. And that's the time my father was like, that is my daughter. Because we are now all over the media. We are like on TV. And journalists who came to interview, this is actually brings in why people think women can't do anything. They would come to me and say, we are looking for Hope Azeda. And I would tell them, I'm Hope Azeda. And they say, no, well, isn't it a man with, you know, they thought it was a big man with, you know, much hair. I'm like, it's me. I'm the man. But they're quite shocked that it was just someone, young woman, doing things. And I was like, you don't need to be a man or old in your brain to do theater. Theater is theater, no matter what age you may be. Which provoked me actually later to do a piece about girl-child education. It opened for me that window that girls are not seen as anything in society. They're the most downtrodden race. So I made a piece called Barrières à Maria. Barrière is from a French word called barriers, or it could be barriers. Basically, it was called like roadblocks of Maria. So the obstacles of Maria. So roadblock was quite a key word immediately after the genocide because of the killings. But this time I was like showing them that the obstacles you're causing a girl are equally this. It's as grave as the roadblocks. Because you're not helping her grow. So if the saying goes that you educate a woman and you educate society. So that gave me another move to another piece, which also got good funding. Yeah. And to another piece that got another good
funding. Is it the beer company was still the funder, or was it somebody
else?
Oh,
no, it was something different. It was UNFPA, United Nations Population Fund. Yeah.
I was just wondering, you know, it's all well and good to be associated with something that gets your name out there as a business. But then if the subject matter of play was somewhat controversial, I would wonder whether the beer company actually would like to be associated with what it was about. So that when they actually saw the play, what did they think?
They first read the script.
They knew what it was going to be.
Yeah, they had never ever. Our approach to that performance was: we do dance, we do music, we do drama. It's a mix of everything. So they just loved the story. That it was a story about bringing Rwandans together.
One of the things that people in Rwanda did as a way of trying to establish accountability, perhaps have some reconciliation, was they adopted this traditional form of dispute resolution, this thing called the Gachacha court, which was, as I understand it, always a kind of an idea that if there was some kind of problem, that the community would come together and that, you know, people would have their say and that there would be perhaps some kind of consensus about how things should be resolved and who was responsible for what and what kind of sanctions there should be. And if somebody did something wrong, I suppose part of it would be standing up and admitting to the fact that they had done something wrong. I just wonder whether you see there is some connection between that process and between what you're trying to do with your theater work.
Yeah, it is, because it's all communal. It's about the community taking issues in their own hands and solving it. So this is more like also community theater, where you go on the ground, feel the need, and work towards that need. So I think that's what also the Gachacha form of justice did. It was giving justice, putting justice in the people's hands. And it helped a lot, because the number of cases after genocide were just overwhelming for the former court of justice. There was not enough information. There was not enough evidence. Lots of evidence had been destroyed. But if you are my neighbor and I know that you killed, and my husband is in jail saying he killed a woman I know that you killed, so I'll bring that out right in the community. Yeah. So it's about it's that whole communal power, giving the people, making people solve their own issues.
And just to give you an example, Hope studied with a major faculty person who dealt with theater for development, named Rosenboa, who's deceased. And one of the things that Rosenboa did in Uganda, she was able to use theater to talk about the issue of HIV/AIDS. And, you know, she's been credited for, you know, helping to lower the cases of AIDS in Uganda. So these are the types of things that theater can do, that the power that it has. You know, they can talk about issues that people would not normally talk about. And theater gets people to, you know, come and discuss these issues. Like I said, there's always a discussion afterwards. You know, how do we solve this problem? And I mean, it's very powerful. I mean, theater is so powerful. I don't think people realize that. Yeah. And I know this sounds cliche-ish, but when I was in Zimbabwe, and I always think about this, I met a young woman. She had gone to see a theater piece in Zimbabwe that dealt with, you know, violence against women. And it was something she could never talk about, but she saw this theater piece, and she saw that other women were going through this, and she had an opportunity to share her experience, and she just said, theater saved my life. I mean, I will always remember that, you know, theater saved my life. Just being able to see people on stage and, you know, had the same experiences that she had. But it can be very, very powerful. And I think you'll see that this week with the works by these women.
Yeah, because I think it is good, that connection to the ground. Mm-hmm. And it gives you the power to just have that, to be grounded. And once you're grounded, then you're very connected to the real issues. Yeah.
And a lot of this theater is free because it's intended to, you know, reach the community. So, or it's very inexpensive.
Yeah. I suppose, though, that gets back to the big challenge for somebody who is trying to put on such a thing is, how do you come up with the money? You have to pay your actors something, unless, of course, they have some other way of making a living. You know, how do you make it an economically sustainable thing?
That's a good question. We are still struggling with that. But our actors are not like full-time. They do other things. Mm-hmm. And we meet because we love it. Because we were focusing on three basic things. The three criteria you must have to join our company is that you must have the interest, you must be able, ability. Basically, it's interest, ability, and availability. Because I don't know anywhere in Africa where a theater practitioner is a millionaire. I don't even know how to count millions of money, but I can count millions of ideas, you see.
Well, do you think, and I'm one of the things that I was interested in maybe having you talk a little bit about is this association of theaters for children that you're involved in, whether as a result of doing this and having people see theater, does that at least make it possible, say, for a girl or a boy who might think that they would want to get on stage, make it more possible for them to think, well, yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, they can do it. But it also builds their confidence. And theater for children and young people is not basically done by children. It can be done by professionals for children. It can be theater it can be adults doing it for children. But what kind of, because I think theater is like food. So if you're preparing a piece for children, what kind of food are you preparing for these children? Is it the right food with the right nutrients? Or have we gone over ahead? We're just thinking professional theater. So, yeah, it's quite, I find children's theater more demanding than performing for adults. Because they're very honest people. If they don't like something, they'll tell you. Their concentration just let go. They will start talking and laughing in an audience, and you just be looking silly on stage. So the art to connect to that audience, I find it very challenging.
Mm. Well, that to take your culinary metaphor too, that's, you know, some people, the kind of things they really like, there aren't always the things that are good for them.
Exactly.
And getting people to have the things that are really good for them, that's more difficult.
It is. It is. Because sometimes what we think is good for them is not what they like. So you need to make an intensive research around that. Sometimes the children we think are children are not children. They're adults. And you think like being in front of a child is just being like, you know, cartoon, like being silly. But these kids they're quite deep. They think big. I mean, if you look at an audience of children that have been child soldiers, let me give an example. At 10 years old, they held guns. You're not going to take that theater to them. They want real issues that will connect to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it calls for really intensive research.
We've talked a little bit about some of the things that you've done, some of the subject matter of the theater that you've been involved with, and I think Kathy Perkins did mention too that there are all sorts of things that people use theater to talk about. Violence, I'm sure domestic violence is an issue. Health issues like HIV/AIDS, all sorts of things. Are there other, I'm interested in hearing from Hope about some of the other things that you have tried to work, other themes that you have tried to work with in theater?
Basically, they're all in the categories of social, political, and economic. They all are in those categories. I think one of the issues I've also worked on is justice. Because, like you talked of Gachacha, after genocide, no one wanted to listen about, to hear anything to do with Gachacha. Because Gachacha, form of justice, was about, you know, a neighbor and a neighbor, they have an issue at home. Some goats came, went and ate his beans in the garden, and that was the kind of justice. So you cannot bring that kind of justice for someone who's killed my people. So that's one of the issues we dealt with, to sensitize people about this Gachacha form of justice, that it was going to help move on, rebuild society. So I did a piece called The Liberating Truth, Speak and You'll Feel Liberated. And it was just about two young girls studying together in the same school and their parents are not telling them the truth. Because one of the girls had lost her parents, and her parents had been killed by her friend. But they're all hiding the truth from them. So this piece was basically about sensitizing people, come out and talk, and we shall be free. Yeah. So it was quite the liberating truth.
That's, I guess, as a way of finishing, it comes back to a point that you've made several times about just how powerful theater can be to do things like that.
Yeah.
We're at the point we have to stop because we've used the time. Just one more time, I do want to mention for people who are in and around Champaign-Urbana, but there will be a number of events going on this week as part of this Celebrating African Women's Writers Festival that is being sponsored by the Department of Theater at the U of I and also the Center for African Studies. And our guest here, Hope Azeda from Rwanda, will be involved in this. There are a number of other women who will be. Some other of them will be here later in the week. Our guest, Kathy Perkins, who's professor of theater, is coordinating the event. So if you want to find out more about it, again, I think probably the easiest thing to do would be to go to either the websites of African Studies or Theater, and you can see a complete schedule of all of the events. Any last sort of thought you'd like to mention here before we finish?
I would just love for people to come out and experience the diversity of these women. They have wonderful stories to tell. And like I said, it's a week-long event. Everything is free. And I would love for people to come to the Saturday celebration. There'll be free African food. And so Saturday's meant to be a festive day. And the panels on Friday, you know, we'll have our scholars in that day.
Mm-hmm.
So please go to the website and check out the all the events.
Kathy Perkins, she's professor of theater here at University of Illinois. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
And Hope Azeda, thank you for being here.
Thank you.